This is Unmind with Great Cloud Michael Elliston Roshi.
The Design of Future Zen, Number 3. Present as Prescient. Present is present, even though ever-changing. Zen remains the same. We closed the last segment with a quote from Master Dogen from Shobo Genzo's Rinmonki regarding monastic practice in 13th century Japan. How do we practice the way without being disturbed by the slandering remarks of others and without reacting to the resentment of others or speaking of the right or wrong of others? Only those who thoroughly devote even their bones and marrow to the practice can do it. Close quote. These instructions and admonitions for practicing the Zen way and maintaining harmony in the Zen monastic community from over 800 years ago come across with great currency, as if Dogen may have been attending some of our past board meetings. It just goes to show that people have always been people, and that conflicts arising in day-to-day dealings with the propagation of communal Zen practice have not changed fundamentally over the centuries and even millennia since the inception of Buddhism. I think it appropriate to raise some of these quintessentially Western attitudes that have come to my attention in the recent past, and especially during the pre- and post-COVID period we have all just come through. Like most of Dogen's teachings, which can sometimes come across as harsh shaming or finger-wagging scolding, the old adage applies. If you see yourself in this picture, or if the shoe fits, wear it. Any and all criticism in Zen, whether implied or explicit, is intended to be reflected back upon ourselves, as in a Zen mirror, and not held up to denigrate others. This is in line with the 10 grave precepts, particularly those advising against discussing the faults of others or praising oneself at the expense of others. While we encourage independence of thinking in Zen and further claim that Zazen is one of the only dependable ways of developing it to fruition, this does not imply that we then become the sole judge and final arbiter of all behaviors of others in the Sangha. This is one of the many misconceptions or delusions that arise in community practice. One of our longer-term members once declared some decades ago that in his dealings with others, he saw himself as the kyosaku, the somewhat controversial warning stick, usually used to strike the shoulders to help you wake up during long retreats. He felt it was his role, and indeed his responsibility, to administer the stick, metaphorically, to those he thought were out of line with the Zen way. I reminded him, gently, that there is a reason why the stick has to be requested in Soto Zen. We do not simply go around whacking people with it willy-nilly, without so much as a by your leave. Dogen said somewhere that we should never regard ourselves as someone else's teacher. If and when we put ourselves in the position of teaching others whatever we consider to be the necessary lessons in Zen, we should remember that in the design of communications, it is the message received, not the message sent, that counts. We may teach another person a lesson we think they need to learn, all right, but it is not likely to be the lesson we intended. Our actions will likely tell them more about us than they do about them. Dogen admonished his young wards on this point, urging juniors and seniors in particular, to avoid using harsh words and behavior in the unfounded belief that criticism, however warranted, will work to their benefit or that of the target of their reproval or of their fellow community members who may witness the confrontation. In some general comments about one of the attitude adjustments that all students of the Buddhist way should adopt, Master Dogen stresses listening over expressing your own limited understanding, especially in the beginning of your practice and study of the Buddha Dharma, which, remember, may require many decades to mature. His remarks seem as timely today as in the 13th century, and taken with the above quote, comprise as good a model of independent thinking and interdependent action that you may come across. Quote 6:12. These days, many people who are learning the way listen to a talk on the Dharma, and above all, want their teacher to know that they have a correct understanding and want to give good replies. This is why the words they listen to go in one ear and out the other. They still lack Bodhi mind and remain self-centered. First of all, forget your ego and listen quietly to what others say, and later ponder it well. Then, if you find some faults or have some doubts, you may make criticism. When you have grasped the point, you should present your understanding to your teacher. Waiting to claim immediate understanding shows that you are not really listening to others. Note that the popular trope, in one ear and out the other, is apparently not of recent coinage. We have to be careful of a certain cultural arrogance and assuming that our present situation is overly unique. It was ever thus, as we say. Or in Zen terms, Buddhas and ancestors of old were as we. We in the future shall be Buddhas and ancestors, taken from Dogen's vow. But to become Buddhas and ancestors, we have to learn to listen, and that entails learning how to listen, which means learning how to hear. You may protest that you already know how to hear. That is, you are hearing and have been doing so all along. But training in design thinking, particularly in the Bauhaus tradition, says, not so fast. You may think you are hearing, seeing, and feeling, but are you really? Drawing, photography, and the other visual arts are all considered ways of training the eye to truly see. The audio arts, music, singing, etc., are likewise ways of training the ear to hear. Kinetic bodywork, dance, theater, athletics, and so on, train the body to feel and to move in gravity with efficiency and elegance. Similarly, in Zen training, we find expressions such as attributed to Dogen's teacher in China, Dantong Ruijing, where he said something like, paraphrasing freely, quote, gouge out your eyes so that you cannot see, and then you may be able to see for the first time. Cut out your tongue, plug up the ears, burn the body, etc., so that they may be replaced with the true body and senses of Buddha nature. This, obviously, on a much deeper level than the Bauhaus training is shooting for. But simply on a social level of discourse, the need to listen is greater than ever, what with all the voices vying for our attention. With the recent burgeoning of interactive meetings on the internet, which incidentally Master Dogen did not have to contend with, fortunately for him, we have witnessed a dramatic evolution of etiquette in public dialogue. Standard admonitions include not interrupting the speaker, keeping your comments brief so that more attendees have an opportunity to participate, directing your comments to the moderator or guest panelist and avoiding crosstalk, and generally resisting the impulse to hijack the proceedings to pursue your own agenda. This syndrome has long been a known issue in American Zen circles, where even in intimate in-person settings, when called upon, certain members of the audience will suddenly turn to the audience to share their viewpoint, rather than deferring to the person hosting the dialogue. This is at a minimum impolite, if not downright rude. But this is America, where all opinions are considered equal, especially by those who hold them. Dogen goes on to modify his admonition to privilege a discerning silence over blurting out our opinion at every opportunity, giving it some time to gain clarity, and then engaging the dialogue in a respectful way. Application to today's social media transactions is too obvious to point out, but I could not resist. Later on, Dogen repeats this instruction, indicating that the issue had risen again in real FaceTime dialogue. 6.14. Students of the Way, when you practice with a certain teacher and learn the Dharma, you should listen thoroughly again and again until you completely understand. If you spend time without asking what should be asked or without saying what should be said, it will certainly be your own loss. Teachers always await questions from their disciples and give their own comments. You should ask again and again to make sure even of things that you have already understood. Teachers also should ask their disciples whether they have really understood or not, and thoroughly convince them of the truth of the Dharma. Close quote. Taking Dogen's point and following along the lines of appropriate attitudes and behaviors in the context of Zen community, including its traditional respect for seniority, and today's smugly iconoclastic attack on anything that smacks of authority. The usual caveats regarding comparisons between our practice of Zen and that of the ancients, particularly the social or Sangha dimension, include the disingenuous excuse that in the time of Dogen and before, male patriarchy and misogyny were prevalent in society. So the societal norms, mores, and memes do not apply to us in modern America. To which our female members and others would likely react with a great rolling of the eyes. Furthermore, the thinking goes, the practitioners of that time were primarily monastic. Thus, the rules and regulations, Japanese shingi, governing the behavior of nuns and monks, were themselves not characteristic of the larger community in those days. That is, they were even less egalitarian than conventions prevalent in the cities and villages among the leadership structures of the times. And so, therefore, how much more so today? A closer reading of history might expose the relatively mythological status of these notions, but we cannot be faulted too much for trying to backplot our current views of what is right and wrong, including ethical behavior and social injustice, to a place in history where our perspective may have had little or no relevance whatsoever. We like to imagine that the arc of history is bending toward the modern concept of justice, as Master Martin Luther King suggests. Admittedly, the language and culture of Buddha's and Dogen's times were somewhat determinative, if not dispositive, of the form and character of Zen practice of the time, both on personal and social levels. Particularly on the level of personal practice, by which term today we primarily refer to Zazen. The tangible differences might be somewhere in the 5% range of effectiveness on outcomes, including such technical developments as those of clothing and seating options. In other words, Zen gear has undergone its own cultural evolution. But the age-old relevance of the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path still holds. In the social sphere is where we will find the most salient differences that cause confusion and to which we may point if we are inclined to mount challenges to Zen orthodoxy. In this regard, the social propagation of Zen, I want to share a few reminders about our root lineage. Matsuoka Roshi was definitely not in a class by himself. He belongs to a small, rarefied club of ancestors who not only took on the propagation of Zen in their time and cultural milieu, but also transported, imported the face-to-face practice and transmission of Zen to a whole nother country. O-sensei joins the likes of Bodhidharma, who sojourned to China, apparently on foot, from the Indian subcontinent around 500 CE. He stands shoulder to shoulder with Eisai Zenji and Master Dogen, who in the 12th and 13th centuries, respectively, traveled by sailing ship to China, bringing what they experienced there back to Japan. In the process, Eisai revitalized Rinzai Zen, which had been predominant in Japan for centuries. Dogen Zenji introduced Soto Zen, emphasizing Zazen over all other methods, around 1225. Matsuoka Roshi brought Dogen Zen to this continent in 1940, though the much longer journey by steamship may have been relatively safer than those of Eisai and Dogen in ancient times. The period between each of these seminal international importations of Zen averages just over 700 years. I am gratified to be the recipient of the benefits of these great founders of our Zen past as one of the current successors of Matsuoka Roshi. I'm also somewhat concerned with the future of Zen, including the vitality of the branch of the tree that I have cultivated here in the southeast region of the USA. Thus, this analysis. If you have any questions or comments on this subject, I would like to hear them. Tune in to the next episode of Unmind as we explore the future of Zen in America a bit further, with an intent to understand how the hybrid nature of our online and in-person interface may affect face-to-face transmission, for good or bad, or more likely, both.
Unmind is a production of the Atlanta Soto Zen Center in Atlanta, Georgia, and the Silent Thunder Order. Find us on the web at aszc.org. You can support these teachings by PayPal to donate at storder.org. Gassho.